All right, guys. So a lot of people ask us, how do they make a podcast? So I'm going to let you know on a secret. On the easiest, most productive way to start a podcast and get it up and running, and that is the app called Anchor. It's free. They have all kind of cool creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. They will distribute your podcast for you to all of the major outlets, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and many more. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one simple, easy place. So if you're interested in starting a podcast, go download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Let's do it.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop. All right, so we're going to go into the nitty gritty, but before we start, you have to acknowledge this because we don't want this to go with people's heads. So, okay. 2012, which was 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You borrowed $30,000.
Yes.
Right? To do your second investment property. And then from there, you kind of just learned the ropes and you're at where you're at now. So, in the words of Kendrick Lamar, right? he took $30,000 and he freaked it to $25
million?
Yes. 7 years.
Yeah. It's, I'll say 2016, though. That's kind of like where the magic happened, though.
Okay.
It's kind of like, that's when like I was consistently able to purchase a property, fix it up, rent it out, and then once it's already rented, go to a lender to cash it out.
All right, so can we get,
if you look at the chart though, like you notice how it's kind of like, I was like, all right, it's like, you know, getting a three, it's like one, and
yeah,
three,
yeah, yeah.
But it's like 2016, that's kind of like when it really like made
the
numbers.
All right, so actually 2015.
So can we that's when I, you know, did like the first cash out.
Can we go to 2015 when you start to really take off and kind of just, cause that's like your blueprint, right? As far as, can you just break that down as far as the flips, how you look at a home, right? Like, can you just tell exactly like what you do?
So what I do is like when I look at a house is like try not to look at a house. I try to look at numbers.
Mm.
So it's in the formula is basically I keep chart of like of my portfolio and I ask myself like, all right, is this going to increase my net worth? And then the other question is this going to increase my cash flow? And if the answer is yes, then it's kind of like, all right, it's a thumbs up, you know, I could get this. But now there's the other question now is like, how fast and can I get my money back on this deal?
Mm.
And then there's like, if all three are yes, then that's when I jump on the deal. Okay, yeah, this is a deal for me. So it's like every property that I see it with that intention. It's like, I think like the most important thing you need to know is how much can a house appraise for? And then it's like the key component here is appraise for, which took me a while to understand because before I would look at a house and I was just like such an honest guy and I would look at it, I would tell myself like, oh, you know what? I could sell that for $250. Mm-hmm. So it's worth $250. But going back now to like the inner city, and it was the kind of like why I stuck to Patterson, because I felt like I knew Patterson like the palm of my hand. And not sure if it's like if it's, you know, if it's the same for every inner city, but let's say Patterson, you get a block.
Mm-hmm.
This corner right here is like where all the hustlers are at, and it's a lot of crime basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this corner right here, which is the same block, super quiet. It's cool. You could walk by. Nobody's gonna, you know, try to hustle you for, you know, to buy any drugs, anything like that.
Yeah.
But now they're on the same exact block. So now you picture somebody coming from out of town, like an appraiser or anyone, and now they see this property over here. But now when they look at comparables, they're looking at the whole neighborhood and gonna look for the median area. So it's like, if this property right here, basically, let's say this one sells for $200, but you know, let's say this one sells for $250, let's just say, right? But now, if you're buying this one and you're buying it through a short sale, it's gonna be a foreclosure, more than likely, they're gonna use this one here as a comparable. So now this brings down the value of this, but this one is worth more, and you know it's worth more because you know the area better. So, and then going back to the other thing about knowing about, you know, appraisal and values, that's kind of where it's at, because it's like, you know that this one's gonna sell for less and this one's gonna sell for more, but when you put those two on paper, depending which way it goes. Remember, as I told you earlier, is like appraisal is not a science, it's an art. So depending on the artist, depending which way they want to go, that value could come in at 200, could come in at 250. So I try to look for the house that's worth 250 that I know the value is going to come in at 200. So it's kind of like now off the bat, as soon as I buy the property, I already know I have 50,000 in equity. The other part of it too, which is why I always try to look for properties that need renovation, because most people do not want to deal with renovations. Most people want to just grab their keys, go inside the house, and they're good to go. So when you get a property and you're renovating, you're adding value to it. Mm-hmm. So now, let's just say the scenario, right? You ended up picking this house for 200, but you know it's already off the bat, it's already worth 250. But now you let's say you throw 25 into it. Now it's not 275, now it's 300. So now you added more value to it.
So when you're doing that, right? When you're about to renovate, right? I'm assuming on your first property, you didn't have a team, or did you? Going into it, right? So what was the process of selecting a team of contractors, like honest people, right? So that you don't get ripped off? Or was it like, you know what, I'm going to learn the craft and do it myself? Or what was the process in creating that?
Well, first properties, let's just say the second property that I purchased, right? That one, I did not do a gut renovation. I just went in, threw a couple, you know, some laminate floorings, painted the walls, patched up a few holes. I think I did like one bathroom. Had I purchased the house today, that probably would have been a complete gut renovation. So you have to do what you know, what you can handle, what you know. Mm-hmm. So when you start off, I advise everybody, just start off, you know, with light renovations and kind of like work your way up. The way it works is basically you get yourself, you know, that one handy guy, which once again, this is why it works out. If you're able to buy in your neighborhood, you can make a few phone calls. Hey, do you know, sir? Like, oh yeah, my cousin has a cousin who is pretty handy. He can help you out. So you start off with the handy guy. But after a while, you know, when you start doing more intense renovations, you know, they might refer you to someone else. Or it's like, you know, just go to Home Depot. It's like, and you study, like Home Depot is where I buy most of my materials. And it's like, and if you go in there and you study, when you see somebody walking out and all they have is just electrical materials, like, you know, this guy very likely is an electrician, or at least knows how to do electrical work. Same thing with a plumber and so forth. So it's kind of like, and you sort of build up your team, but it's really a trial and error. Unless you get some referrals, you're going to get burned. You know, a lot of people ask me a lot of times, is like, have I ever lost money in real estate? And the answer is no, just because I've been able to buy properties that have a lot of equity in them. But that doesn't mean that I did not lose money on the deal. So it's like, if I go in and I get a property, I'm projecting to make, let's say, $50,000, and I get this one contractor, and, you know, he messes up, and I end up losing $10,000 one time. Still make $40,000, mm-hmm. you know, but I didn't like lose money, but, you know.
You're still in the green.
Yeah, still in the green. You know, contractors, it's tricky with contractors. It's like, that's why I call them contractors, because if you're not careful, they will con you. What I do now to minimize the chances of somebody ripping me off is basically I pay for all the materials, which is pretty cool too, because it's like you start getting your miles. So I pay for the materials. I make what I call a draw schedule, which is the same kind of schedule you have to give your hard money lender. When you get a loan from a lender, you can't just tell the lender, oh, I need $50,000 for a renovation. You got to kind of like map it out. Like, all right, I'm going to need $2,000 to get the house. I'm going to need this much for this. And then you kind of like do every step of you know, what's required. You map it out. Once this is already mapped out, then, you know, you start pulling like the money out.
All right. So hold versus flips, because you hear there's two kinds of trains of thoughts in real estate, right? Some people only want to flip. Some people only believe in buying and holding. Some people do both. You're more on the buying and holding side, right?
Yeah, more buying and holding. It's a little more complicated, because it's like when you buy and flip, it's pretty straightforward. You buy a house, you renovate it, you fix it, and you sell it, you make a profit. When trying to hold it, you know, it goes back to the whole thing of appraisal. What if it doesn't, you know, it doesn't come through and the appraisal doesn't come in right? So, you know, you kind of got to like really, you know, maneuver your way around that. But if you buy a house that has, and again, you follow like that formula, make sure you follow the cash flow. Thing about real estate too is all numbers. So you kind of have all the numbers in front of you. Basically, you already know how much money you're going to collect in rent. You already know how much you're paying for the property. Over time, once you already know this, you already know what you're going to spend in renovation. So you kind of already know what the mortgage is going to be, what the rent is going to be, what the profit is going to be. So when you see it's a really good profit, you keep it, and you know, you don't want to let it go, you want
to
keep it.
So how do you learn that? Like to say, okay, all right, I understand that you want to buy a home for cheap and fix it up, but the average person, they don't have any knowledge of like, okay, how much this is actually going to cost to renovate, or
how do I know it's a good deal? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're just going in with no team, just by yourself, how do you?
So very likely you're gonna be a first time home buyer. So I recommend either go for a 3-family or 4-family. And light renovation, so it's like, you know, painting the walls, you know, maybe throw some laminate flooring. Make sure you know how much rent is coming in on this property. And then also see how much you're paying for it and know what your mortgage is gonna be. So the difference, that's gonna be your cash flow. As far as like, what is the number? It's kind of like, for me personally, like for any property that I get, 1500 is kind of like my number.
1500 in rent?
The difference between the mortgage and the rent. So let's say the mortgage is 2000, I need to be collecting 35.
Okay.
So the way I do that is basically 500 goes aside, and that's for your vacancies, your repairs, the things that can happen in the house. And then the other 1000 is kind of like your profit.
Okay.
That's the minimum that you want.
That's, yeah, rule of thumb for me, for my area, that's kind of like, you know, if those are the numbers, then it's a keeper, and then I go through on the deal. If those are not the numbers, then I just kind of like pass up on the deal.
Do you have a minimum as far as the value of the home? Like, you want to get it for at least 50,000 under its market value or something like that?
Yeah. So going back to like the formula is basically the value of the property. Then I look for, what can I cash this out for? Like right now I have a lender who gives me 75% loan to value. So I already know value, multiply that by the 75%. Let's just say the number is 200. So kind of I use 200 as my mark. All right, then I'll say, okay, now I have the 200,000 right here. Look at how much you know I'm paying for the property. Let's just say it's 100. That's 100 spread. Mm-hmm. Now I gotta look at, all right, how much is it gonna cost me to renovate. If it's gonna cost me 100 to renovate, and the cash out is kind of like 200, it's 200. It basically, like there's no money in there basically. So it's kind of like, all right, if it's 100, then I have to be like, let's say 150 or even 175, so that once I'm done renovating and do the cash out, I'm actually able to get my money back. Like, the goal is not so much to make a profit on the cash out, but just to at least get your money back so you can move on to the next one. Because if you do it correctly, if let's say you have $40,000, $30,000 to buy a property, you go out, you buy a property, you renovate it, you rent it, and then you cash it out. If you can at least get back your $30,000, and it's like, let's say it's from it'll take you 6 months to do that. Mm-hmm. So 6 months later, basically you got your $30,000 back, and do that again. So like, it's kind of like with that same money, every 6 months you could buy a property, or every 3 months, depending on how fast you move.
And you're taking your money out, just some people, like, you're taking your money out via not home equity loans, right? You're taking your money out via
not just the hard money. So keyword is asset-based lender. Yes. It's income-based lenders will be like your Wells Fargo, your Bank of America, you know, your local bank. They're mm-hmm. the income-based. You know, you go to them, they want to see the dope credit score. They want to, you know, they want to see that you have really good income taxes, you know, that you're actually making good money yourself. Mm-hmm. Me, all of my money comes from real estate. So when I go to a bank and, you know, I still try it out once in a while because they got really good interest rate. And I always get denied for the loans because it's like, all they see is like, they just see all these expenses. Everything's coming from real estate. So for them, it's like, oh my God, it's like such a high risk. Like, you know, we can't rock with you. But when you go to these asset-based lenders, they don't see any of that. All they're seeing is like, what is the house? Like, this is the house right here. What? How much do you think it's worth? Oh, it's worth this much. All right, this is how much rent. This is how much I'm collecting the rent. So it's like, all right, cool. Yeah, we could give you the loan on that.
So outside of hard money lenders, who else is an asset-based lender?
Asset-based lender, the one I use right now, they're called Vizio.
So they're like companies.
Yeah, they're companies. Yeah, okay. Yeah. They're nationwide. Legit bank companies, but they just work with investors.
What's the one that you use called?
Vizio Lending is the one that I'm currently using right now. That's another thing too. I mean, you got to keep these guys in rotation because it's like the other lender that I used before, they were giving me 70%. Now this one gives me 75%. That 5%, that's a huge difference. You know, it's if you're talking about a $300,000 house, that's $15,000.
Yeah. What's the interest rate usually from that compared to like a regular traditional bank?
A traditional bank might charge, let's say, like a 5%. These guys are charged like a 6.5%.
Yeah, and
then it's a 5-year arm. So you know, after 5 years, you have to either sell the house or you have to refi it.
And we kind of spoke off camera, but we said hard money. Anybody could be a hard money lender, right?
Yeah,
you can do it individually, or you can team up with a bunch of people.
Exactly.
To do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think one of the other things is that the time frame, right? The time frame when they want their money back is obviously a lot different, right? This is not a 30-year thing, right? They want their money back. And what are some of the time frames?
Well, hard money lenders, they want their money back ideally like in 1 year. They might give an extension for another 6 months or another year.
Mm-hmm.
With these cash out asset-based lenders, they'll give you loans for a fixed for 5 years, like the 30-year mm-hmm. mortgage, but basically it's like the interest rate is fixed for 5 years, 7 years, or 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But after, you know, at one point, they want you to either, you know, refi them out, sell the house, Or you could go with the 30-year program, but the interest rate is going to be a lot higher. You might look at like an 8.5%, 9%. So I'd rather just go with the short term because I figured, you know, 5 years for me is like a long time. And I'm constantly evolving in real estate. So I figured, like, you know, get the lower interest rate just to increase the cash flow. And then in 5 years, I'll figure it out, you know, see what's the next.
So what do you usually do in 5 years? What do you do? Like, what's your game plan?
But let's just say right now, work with my portfolio right now. Right now, I just started building brand new construction houses. Those I'm not going to keep. Had I done new construction a couple of years ago, I definitely would have kept them. But my mindset right now is to develop buildings. And I already have the land to start developing buildings. But I feel like that's like too far of a reach for me right now.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do, I'm going to end up sending about from 10 to 15 new construction, sell those, get that money, and then start building the buildings. So like in 5 years, I already have a couple of buildings. Once I start developing the buildings, let's say if I develop a 30-unit building, I'm going to start unloading 30 units of these like smaller properties. Like, I don't know, I'm gonna deal with like the headache of these smaller ones when I can have 30 tenants in one section.
Yeah. If this sounds like Monopoly, it is. Like, I literally watched your vision board, and like the last board is like, and when I get all these things, I'll have my Monopoly. So you start with the little greenhouses exactly. Until you can get the red building, right? And once you start doing that,
three greenhouses and one red hotel. That's
hotel. Yeah.
If you understand Monopoly, I'll say all the time. If you understand Monopoly, you can understand how to make money in this world.
Yeah
look, I'm gonna say this right now. Like the way I play Monopoly as a kid and even now, that's the same way I approach real estate. It's like my strategy when I play Monopoly is just, you know, obviously you got to go to just collect the money. But whenever I land on a piece of property, I try to get that property. Like I focus on just getting like the property and then, you know, focus on getting like kind of like the houses. So it's kind of like that's sort of what I've been doing. It's like if I see a really good deal and I land on it, I'm going to try to get it. You know, it's like don't let it pass up. Now I own properties that are kind of like next to each other. If you look at a building anywhere you go and you really size up the building, you realize like, you know what? It's not that big of a land. It's right. Just that on a small piece of land, they just went, you know, pretty high up and they have all these units. So in the inner city is where you're gonna find the buildings. You're not gonna find them in the suburbs. So now if you basically, it's sort of just like Monopoly, if you get, you know, four properties and on those four properties, now you pop a building.
All right, so that leaves perfect segue into our next segment where we're gonna talk about your next level, what you're doing, what you just briefly talked about, but we're gonna go into detail as far as the next level. All right, so we're playing Monopoly with real money, like the what was that video?
The president's
video. Man. Shout out to Jay. We had to reference Jay. We kept on the streak alive. AZ,
true player staff.
Yeah,
true player staff. We're gonna play with some real money.
AZ, Dame, Big. We was kind of raised off of music, so that's what we relate to the music a lot. But if anybody from that era, you remember they were playing Monopoly with real money, but. Fernando's actually really playing Monopoly. Like, it's not a rap video. It's not a rap video.
Deeper than rap.
No. It's bigger than rap.
No, we get inspired by rappers.
So, all right. So now you talked about the blueprint as far as to buy the homes and then to get the money out of the homes and then buy another home and kind of keep that cycle going. But you're saying that, see, all successful people have a plan, right? Nobody just start. We had another guest on Episode 11, shout out to Derek Falcon. He was a great episode on, he's a restaurant owner in Baltimore. And he spoke about, you have to have a vision, right? He was like, whenever he goes into something, he thinks about like, what is his grandkids gonna inherit? Like, you know, that's like his play. Like, what's the grandkids gonna inherit? Even though he doesn't even have kids yet, I don't think.
So
that's like, you gotta always think three steps ahead. So you're already planning three steps ahead, right? So you're doing the real estate thing with the mixed unit, multi-level homes and things of that nature, multifamily homes. But the next play is a bigger play, right?
Yeah.
So we want to talk about that in this segment. So you told me over the phone when we spoke and I saw at the seminar that now you're just buying plots of land, right? Yeah. And now you're a real estate developer.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
So a couple of months back, I was with Caesar, and we were at a political function, and we just, you know, chopping it up, and he showed me an email. He's like, oh, look, these lots, they're for sale. Like, you're interested? And I looked at them, and I saw the addresses. I'm like, oh, man, I'm just garbage. And he's like,
Can you pause for 2 seconds? Because when I say lots, right, a lot of people will think, oh, you're buying a parking lot.
No, lots of land.
So that goes over. Like they're like, oh, he's buying a parking lot.
Yeah, lots. Basically, that's where your properties look like the house is located.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you.
So he looks at them too. He's like, yeah, man, I feel the same thing. But as I'm looking through it, I saw there was one address that popped up, and there was two lots, and they were next to two properties that I already own that are right next to each other. So I was like, oh, wait a minute. I was been looking for that one. I was like, whoosh. So I was like, yo, let me get that list. He sent it over to me and then reached out to the realtor, but I just wanted those two. I wasn't interested in the other ones.
Yeah.
So, but the guy was like, nah, the seller, he's only willing to basically sell the whole everything together. Like, he's not going to let you just make it pick which ones you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I still pushed for it. I was like, you know what? Then I'm going to buy the, like, you know, I try to squeeze in half of them. I was like, send them off for like half. He's like, nah, he wants, you know, you got to buy everything. So I lowballed him on everything. And just with the idea, I said, you know what? I'm going to buy everything. And as soon as I buy it, the numbers, if he gives it to me at this price, I could just throw it back on the market, just make a few dollars on it.
Mm-hmm.
So get into the process. I ended up going on the contract. As I'm going on the contract, I started doing more research. I started researching brand new constructions. And I noticed that they were selling for like $350, $330, $360. And I realized that they're new constructions, but these new constructions were built in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these will be built in 2018. So I was like, wait a minute, that means that these have to be worth a lot more than, mm-hmm. so at least $375. So I figured, all right, so the key is like, no, number one, you got to know what can you sell something for. So like, all right, $375. So now, how much am I paying for these lots? On average, I was like paying like
$25,000.
How many lots did you buy?
22.
You bought 22 lots, $25,000 a piece.
Yeah, $25,000 a piece. Yeah, and there was like another, like a two family in there that they just kind of like threw in.
So how do you buy lots? You buy it in cash, or can you get like a loan for that?
That was like a mission, because I'm calling up like the hard money lenders that I use, and they're like, we don't own them vacant lots. I was like, wait a minute, okay, I just put up like $20,000 non-refundable, which you know you can't own me on this. Like, nah, you know what? You got to put up like 50%. I was like, shit, I can't. I was like, no, that's too much. Then I started making phone calls and I started explaining to them, you know, having conversations, like, you know how much business we've done.
You got some great content, man. If I call somebody for $20.
Well, it's all about relationships.
Yeah, exactly. You built some really good relationships, man.
So, and I'm a quiet guy. Like, you know, I'm not like a big speaker, but, you know, when it comes to like, you know, business and stuff, and then get on that phone, it's like, you know, I started transforming, man. I'm like, it's like Michael Jackson gets on stage, you know, quiet dude off stage, but on stage, he has to perform at Showtime. Long story short, I convinced them to loan me, and they were willing to do, you know, the lender was willing to do 20%. One thing about these lots that I picked up, though, is that because they're located in urban areas, they're located in redevelopment zones, which meant that the city has these set idea of what you can build on these lots. And if you meet the square footage and what they want, then you don't need to go in front of a zoning board. You can just basically submit paper, like just submit plans to the building department. Is just like taking out a permit on a whole new construction.
Mm.
So that allowed me to leverage these out. So as soon as I closed, I was able to, you know, get with the architect and submit all the paperwork, and I already have permits on five, which means I already have the financing in place to build these five.
What's the permit? You talked about that when we first spoke. You gotta have the permits, like it's a process, right? When you buy land, like it's different than just buying a home, right?
So, When you buy land, it's more complicated because it's like banks don't really want to loan on land, because what do you have? You just have dirt, basically. You know, there's like no property, there's no cash flow, nothing on it. It's just basically vacant lots.
Mm-hmm.
And in most places, when you buy a lot, you have to go in front of a zoning board, which can take a year before you can start building on. These, you know, fortunately, I was able to kind of like build right away. So, now going back to like the numbers, basically like, so $375 and then $25 for the lot, that puts me like at $350. So now the difference between now, let's say a few years back, is like the market where it's at now, where it was a few years back. If we go back like 3 years, you built a new construction home, you were lucky to get $250, maybe $275 for it. But now think about it. Now let's say if it costs you $225 to build and you're going to sell it for $250, you're almost like breaking even, basically.
Yeah.
Or even like, you know, $275, not really making much money. So now that you can go $375, that gives an extra whole $100,000. So that makes a big difference. So that kind of changed my mind. I said, you know what, why am I going to not do complete renovations when I could just basically build all these homes?
Yeah.
So now instead of grabbing the lots, keeping the ones that I want to send off the other ones, I said, nah, forget that. I'm going to basically get all these lots and I'm going to build all of them.
Yeah, so can we go back a little bit? Because you said Caesar had a list, right? And it was 22 lots. Where does someone even see that list? Like, is that at an auction? Like, where are we getting that? We have to go to our county clerk or something?
No, that's just relationships. It's basically when you're known you know, for making deals, deals will pop up on your email. Like, you know, I get phone calls all the time, like, hey, listen, I got this deal. And it's like, you know, if it's a good deal, jump on it. If it's not a good deal, then I'll let it go. A lot of times people tell me, like, hey, you ever let go one of those deals? But, you know, my thing is this, it's like, you don't want it, because it's like, if this is the reason, if I let it go, it's because it's not a good deal. Basically, if it's a good deal, I'm going to somehow, some way, I'm going to make it happen.
So, all right. So, okay. So now you're building homes, right? So when you're building homes from scratch, right? What kind of homes are you building? How do you build a home? Who do you have contract? Like, how does that happen?
So, all right. So, I mean, first of all, you know, the idea of building something from the ground up was scary. I was like, I've never done it. It's like, how am I going to do this? But, you know, going back to the whole renovation schedule, when you map it out, when you like kind of break everything up into pieces, it's like when you do a complete renovation, the first thing that I basically look for is, you know, you need to gut the property. Once you gut the property, then you go to the framing. You know, it's like a system. Then from framing, you go to you end up doing the plumbing, then you do the electric. You know, then it comes the insulation, then it comes the drywall. So it's like a process, a step. You just kind of map it out step by step. So now, if you put complete renovation on one side, you put new construction on the other side. What's the difference between the two? The only difference is that on a new construction, you need foundation and you need framing. Once you have foundation and framing, pretty much what you have is like the skeleton of a house. When you buy a house and you do a gut renovation, that's all you're left with, the skeleton of a house. So now, so I kind of like really did the math. I was like, oh, if I picked up the loft at 25, how much can it really cost me to do a foundation? And I just, you know, and I figured, you know what? Made some phone calls, just, you know, contractors giving me prices, and like most people said, like, oh, 40,000.
For cement up, 40,000?
Yeah, just the foundation. Okay. So I was like, all right, 40,000. And then made some other phone calls. How much is, you know, for the frame? The same thing. Okay. Came up to price like 40,000, like 80. So now 80 plus the 25, that's 105. I was like, I'm paying that right now.
To renovate.
For like a complete renovation. So, and that's the worst case scenario.
Right.
Now, being like someone who knows how to maneuver my way around construction, it is like I probably cut both of them down like by half.
So how much? It'll cost, like, how much will it cost to build up everything? The house.
Like, right now, I mean, it's going to be my first rodeo, so it's kind of like, it's just a budget that I have in my head. And my budget right now is like 175.
And you sell that home for how much?
375.
So you make 200,000.
But then, you know, you minus the 25 of the land and minus the closing costs.
Right.
Yeah, so let's say like 150. So like 10 of them is like 1.5.
So what's
are you selling these homes or are you
selling all of them? Yeah. Like I said, like, only selling them because it's like now my vision is to develop buildings. So I already have the lots for the buildings. I just don't have the knowledge of building a building, and I don't have the liquid funds to get into a project like that. Because it's like I have this big portfolio and net worth is looking pretty nice.
Yeah.
But you know the cash flow is looking pretty tight because it's kind of like the way I see it. Once all my personal bills are taken care of, it's like if I have $5,000 in cash flow in a month.
Yeah.
The way I see it is like money has to work for me. I don't work for money. So it's kind of like that money's just sitting in the bank. I just got basically $5,000 acting lazy in the bank. So I got to put them to work.
Yeah.
So I look around and try to find like a property and that I know I can hold up. Like, all right, that's $5,000 worth of mortgages that I can hold up on the house until I'm ready to start, you know, working on it.
Yeah, you said.
So, wait.
Go ahead.
Money works for me. I don't work for money. Shit, I like that.
And I was actually going, because you told me something off camera. You was like net worth over, what was the slogan you said?
Because it's kind of like separate things. You got your, you know, your asset minus the liabilities, which is, you know, let's say
we've heard that before.
You said net worth rich but cash poor.
I'm net worth rich but cash flow poor.
Right.
So I'm cool with that for now because like I'm trying to build up. I'm trying to, you know, just climb up to a certain level.
Right. So your net worth could be 30 million, right? But your cash flow could be 3,000, and that's okay, right?
Like, exactly, yeah. Like, I wish I had that. But it's basically like, yeah, like, you know, it's two different things. Like, it's just rappers, for example, like, you know, people who get these large amounts of money, they're cash rich.
Right.
Like, they have a lot of cash on hand, but they probably have, like, no net worth. You know, exactly. Like, you probably see people with, like, the nice cars, the jewelry and everything, and they're riding around with their net worth.
Yeah.
So, but then you can see someone like me, now I'm driving a Toyota Tacoma. So it's like, I'm not studying, but it's like the net worth is looking nice.
The net worth is looking more than nice. What's the time frame on building from the ground up?
That's the thing, you know, so it's like, we don't know, when you're not familiar with something, in my mind, I would have said, oh, it's like a year is going to take to build up a house.
Mm-hmm.
Before I started doing the house, I was like, 6 months, I'm going to build, you know, it's going to be the time frame. Now the time frame is looking like 3 months. So I think like three months I could knock out a house.
Wow.
And I could probably build them like two to three weeks apart. So it's, if you go on my Instagram right now, I already posted two of them.
I saw you with the cement.
Yeah, exactly. So one already have the foundation. The other one I'm working on the footing. And then probably like another 2 weeks, one already is going to have the framing. The other one's going to have the foundation. And I'm going to be working on the footing on that one. And it's like, and they're going to be lined up like that.
Are you just using the same team each time? Or are you like, you know what, I'm going to capitalize by using different teams that I trust to work on these properties?
It's like I have my core guys that I trust. And like I know they can handle things, and then it's their responsibility to build up on them. So it's kind of like my project manager. His job is to kind of like, I tell him this is what I want to do, and then he goes out, he finds the extra help, even if it means, you know, reaching out to a contractor to kind of help him out. You know, it's crazy. Like if I reach out to a contractor, let's just say they might tell me $15,000, I tell him to reach out, he ends up getting it for $10,000. You know, because it's like the relationships and basically the concept of like, hey, listen, you got to give me a good price because I need to make money off of this. Mm. But then, you know, the, obviously I know what's going on and the savings get passed down to me.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again, free education, right? That's the good thing about this show is that it's all free and all of our guests are willing to provide information because you didn't have to. You know, tell people what you're doing. Like, you could just be selfish.
Nah, yeah. Like, I mean, I'll say this much. It's like when C's did the first seminar and he tells me, yo, I'm going to do a seminar. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, yeah, remember, because we spoke about doing like little seminars, but like, in churches. Like, you know, like small things. You know, it's going to get back to the community. Like, and I see every time I see like a, you know, a pastor, I've talked to him, like, let's, you know, I'll do real estate. You want me to go home and speak to your congregation? Then it's like, let me know. I'll come through and I'll speak. You know, nobody's ever invited. You know, but it's kind of like maybe now, you know, start getting phone calls and stuff. But, so I thought that's what it was going to be. He's going to be like, nah, we're going to do like these seminars, you know, for like, I was like, yo, we got money. Like, you know, like, why do this? But then when I went to the first seminar, right, I was supposed to speak at the first seminar, right? And it's like, when I get there, I was like, oh, nah, I can't speak, man. It's like, I'm not a public speaker. So I was like, nah. But looking at the crowd, when I seen the crowd, I seen like everybody's like from the, you know, the first one was in Patterson. I seen a lot of people that I know. And it just kind of hit me. I'm like, you know what, man? That was me 10, 15 years ago, man. I knew nothing. And I needed like somebody to kind of just not help me out, like giving me a hand, but just kind of like guiding me. Like, tell me, this is, you know, this is the direction. And it's kind of like, and we came from nothing. So it's like, I feel like when they see us, you know, they're not seeing these guys in these fancy suits. They're seeing themselves. So they're saying like, you know what, if they did it, they were able to put in the work and, you know, look where they're at now, that means I can do it. So I feel like, I felt bad like that I didn't speak. I felt bad like, yeah, you know what, I let my fear, you know, stop me from going up there. And like, and these people, it's kind of like, they need like that motivation, you know what I'm saying? They need that information. So that motivated me to kind of like, to push through and actually speak on stage. Okay. But I feel like it is like a responsibility for, you know, for people like us that we are, you know, at a certain level where we have like this knowledge and this information, and it's kind of like we could keep it, but it's like, you know, if Tiger Woods right now showed you how to play golf, Michael Jordan showed you how to play basketball, that's not gonna dim their light.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Right, they're still gonna be who they are. So exactly. I feel like if I go out here and I tell you everything that I do, how I do it,
you still gonna eat regardless.
I'm gonna eat regardless. I'll tell you this right now. I mean, like, I could like stop today and just with these lots that I have, with these plans that I have with the buildings, I'm going to stay busy for the next 5 years. And all my crew, everybody that works for me, they're going to stay busy for the next 5 years. So we're all going to eat. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, why try to keep that information? It's kind of like, you know, I don't need to bring you down so I could elevate. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I could elevate myself and then bring you up, and it's like, and I still be up too.
Everybody eats, man.
Yeah, everybody eats. I love it.
Yeah, everybody
gotta eat. You know what I mean?
Sure, man.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.